A report last fall from the United Nations outlined drastic effects from food shortages to extreme heat that could be felt by 2040. And this week, officials from around the world are meeting at the 4th UN Environment Assembly in Nairobi, Kenya. It's a gathering of heads of state, business leaders, and UN officials that are meeting to discuss issues from agriculture to waste management to technology innovations and possible solutions to the growing climate crisis. Joining me now is Alexander Kaufman, climate reporter for HuffPost. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So what's happening in Nairobi? What are the goals of that meeting? I mean, because a lot of these meetings convene and it sounds like you've got a lot of big names and big people in the room, but is something actually going to happen here?
You know, with any of these meetings, a lot of it is just kind of convening, looking at reports, and trying to find a way in which you can build some sort of consensus across the developed and developing world about how to tackle some of these issues. But probably one of the most important things that is coming up at this meeting and is well timed to a study that was released on Monday is, this is one of the first big meetings where they're talking about what governance strategies on geoengineering will look like. So geoengineering broadly is the concept of how you can deploy different technologies to impact the climate and potentially reverse some of the effects of centuries of burning fossil fuels that have been heating up the planet. The most controversial of these is a technique called solar geoengineering, which proposes, through a variety of different techniques, essentially blocking out some of the sun's rays and cooling the planet down in that way, or at least halting the warming of the planet. Now, this is proven technology that could work. The problem is that there have been different studies that have come out that say, you know, if you were to suddenly halt that process, you risk having global warming not only reach where it would have been had you not done it at all, but reach it at a more accelerated rate and have it become much more dangerous. Another problem is that it may cool down Mumbai in the middle of a heat wave. You risk the potential that it could cause a drought somewhere in Vietnam. And that becomes a very complicated issue. And considering we can't even agree in any kind of concerted way to lower emissions and mitigate the impacts of climate change, taking on a technology like that involves a host of governance issues.
So we have governance issues, but there are also corporations are going to be here. And what is their role? What are they trying to get out of this? Or what role are they playing in the talks generally?
That's right. So, I mean, big companies generally show up to all of these UN climate summits on the environment. They play a really big role in the Conference of the Parties, which is the annual conference that generated the Paris Agreement in 2015. And they play different roles. I mean, they are there to lobby. They are there as part of some countries' delegations. And this tends to be a really controversial thing between developed countries and developing countries because, you know, you have, for instance, some of these small island nations in the Pacific who feel that it is wildly inappropriate that a country as vast and prosperous as the United States invites an Exxon or a Chevron or another large company that is so uniquely responsible for this crisis to have any kind of seat at the table, much less a seat beside the most powerful and hegemonic country there.
Alex, let's talk about agriculture. What is the focus here? Because we know that certain types of agriculture and food production are really unsustainable and bad for the environment. What are they talking about at the conference?
They're talking about agriculture really broadly. I think it's important to note kind of going into this that, you know, as it is, the food practices that we have for feeding the 7 billion human beings on this planet right now are extremely environmentally taxing, whether that is from the chemicals that are sprayed, whether that's from the tendency to plant monocultures in a lot of places that are rapidly killing out other species of certain edible fruits and plants. Bananas are a big one. And, you know, different irrigation practices in different places are not good. And so at this conference, they are trying to discuss a variety of different ways that can be dealt with. You know, part of it is finding ways to use fewer chemicals on crops. Another part of it is trying to find fresh ways to just educate farmers, particularly in developing countries, about how to more safely grow crops locally in a lot of these places. particularly in places that have rapidly urbanized, you know, thinking like big cities in Western Africa, you know, you have a tendency of people to grow food for sustenance and then water it with water that they're getting that is filled with human sewage, you know, and then you're selling raw vegetables that contain E. coli and other types of bacteria from human fecal matter, and you're causing rapid spread of disease. You know, these things are more for developing countries, but this is also a big thing in developed countries too. I mean, there is a lot of discussion about how we can more sustainably farm food indoors through vertical farming, how we can look into cell-based meat and alternatives to the meat industry, which, you know, around the Green New Deal debate here, we've been hearing a lot more about its emissions and the threat against your hamburgers. And while a lot of that is nonsense, it is very true that meat is a very large emitter, and the practices around raising meat in an industrial fashion are undeniably cruel.
And what about plastics? Because this is something we've talked about here on The Takeaway. We covered how China in particular has stopped accepting a lot of plastics for recycling. Has there been a lot of focus on this, what this really means, or are we just hearing a lot of bluster so far?
The answer is both. There has been a lot of focus on this, and this, I think most people recognize that this is probably one of the most tangible and visible impacts of our sort of consumption-based economy for the past century. You know, the bigger crisis now, as you pointed out, is the fact that China has closed its doors to waste from other countries. And now that China has closed its doors in an effort to kind of clean itself up, you're seeing these impromptu landfills that are developing all over Southeast Asia. So the problem hasn't actually been dealt with in any kind of substantive way. There has been a movement for a long time, particularly in these kind of elite circles at Davos and elsewhere, for things like the quote-unquote circular economy, things that either mean that you'll have companies giving you packaging that you can reuse, which, again, puts the onus on the consumer and the individual. And
but is it up to us, or is it really up to the companies to say, we're just going to stop selling all this? Because I keep thinking about the tension between, like, one of the notes I have here is, where does our responsibility begin? And where do the responsibility of these technologies kind of take over, right? At what point, or do they have to be concurrent? Do we have to do both things?
No, I mean, I'm a firm believer that they're individual environmental action is not actually something that can make any kind of substantive difference. And if anything, what it does is it alienates regular people who, you know, then feel like the act of caring about the planet that we are bequeathing to our children is some type of elite concern. There needs to be some kind of concerted effort by the adults in the room and by the regulators to say enough is enough and we're not going to allow for this kind of wasteful consumption and packaging anymore.
Alexander Kaufman is a climate reporter for HuffPost. Alex, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure.